Welcome to the Declarations of War podcast. This is episode 39. Thanks for tuning in. Host this time around are myself, Alexa Card, Ninja Turtle.
Hello.
And our very special guest, Ari Danica.
Hola, ¿cómo está, señor?
Sexy. Bueno. First up, I'd like to give a shout out to CCP Fosse. Sorry, bro. My bad. Okay. Apparently, command ships will indeed have the ability to fit three links. But they will get the double racial bonus. Didn't actually change the number of links they were capable to fit. Sorry. We'll hopefully have Fozzy on the show. I'm working with CCP to try to book him. Fingers crossed.
Hey guys, Turtle. I want to give a shout out to Rooks and Kings. We had Lord Maldoror and Eldreth on last episode, and it seems to have been a good luck charm for them because they've been stomping bases ever since. Against the likes of like Transmission Lost and some really big names, so props to them. It was a fun chat, and it's good to see them just rickrolling.
And I guess I'm next. I would like to take a moment of silence for the three Malices lost during last week's New Eden Open session. So just a moment, please. And then I'd also like to give a shout out to my bros in the Eve Pod Pack channel on Skype. What's up, y'all? Holla!
Our thoughts and prayers are with the former owners of those Malices. Alright, first up, let's get to some poll results. Last podcast, our question was renting out 00, an outdated model or still necessary for alliances to survive? Some really contentious results, 55% to 45% outdated. So, obviously there's a lot of disagreement within the community as to whether renting is still viable and necessary, or whether it's, you know, sort of an old guard thing that needs to die off. Now, Danny, you are an HB, well, not HBC, but you're a CFC member, which sort of pioneered the no-renting model, which HBC then also adopted. So, what are your thoughts on this?
It's a double-sided coin, and it's... As someone who lives in space that I don't have to pay for isk-wise, now, I do pay for it with time, effort, energy, my gameplay, I prefer this model for me. I'd rather have my own ISK in my wallet. However, there are some rich industrialists out there who are like, you know, give me a system where I can mine my belts, run my missions in NullSec, and I'll pay you for protection. So some people really prefer I rather look at it as like a protection money model. Well, not even that, not even a protection money, but you're paying, sometimes you're paying for a lot more than space because the people you're renting from will come defend your space, or, you know, will do something if you get invaded. So, you know, there is a demand, so why not let it be supplied?
That's interesting, because that's the way I would have seen renting, like, a couple of years ago, having the actual space owners come and defend. I don't think we really see that all that much. But, I mean, you're right, it is kind of like a duplicitous issue, because... You know, you have. I think there's a lot of connection to RMT when you start looking at renters, and then I think personally I voted outdated model because that's kind of the way the meta is going. I mean, you have the HVC and the CFC both really against the whole renting idea, and I mean that's most of the NullSec meta right there. So
it's interesting that you mentioned the defending space thing. That used to be what it was, but I think we're seeing now that. It's a symptom of people not really caring about 00 much at all anymore, like in general. So when someone is attacking, usually the renters are the first to be abandoned, rather than try to put it on the line and protect their economy and their group. They're just, you know, they'll fight for their core system maybe, and then just run.
But when you say don't care about NullSec space, do you mean they don't care about owning it, they don't care about putting up a fight for it, or they don't care about the resources that are out there? Because I think people care about the resources, but the resources are not high stakes enough for them to feel like they need to put forth the effort for them.
Right. I mean, some alliances frankly see holding SOV as a burden. economically and otherwise.
It is. Soft is expensive. And then if you start doing things like going into upgrades, it's incredibly expensive, especially since some of the upgrades don't do as much as they used to with the way soft has changed. With the introduction of the additional NullSec standing, having weight to what kind of sanctums and spawns you get. But I think the game is moving away from it, but I think there are still those who would like that. And as opposed to the botting situation, it's kind of like, usually renter space are like the ghettos of Eve, and I hate to make that analogy, but a lot of times it's usually the space that people want the least, and you know, the cost paid for what you're getting out of it really isn't what a savvy person would call beneficial.
Well, you hit the nail on the head there with cost, I think, and it goes back to the metagame and the relative size of it all, and it's the scope of the size, alliance sizes that we're seeing in NullSec now have never really been seen before, and all that space that, you know, a 1,000 or 2,000 man alliance might rent out, you know, now is holding a 6,000, 8,000 person alliance, and the space that renters would occupy is better off being occupied by people within that alliance paying for that sovereignty. So I think, you know, all the more reason I think that's going to be a dying model.
Well, I don't know that NullSec population is really a problem. It's certainly not overcrowded.
I'm not saying it's overcrowded, but you don't have that overabundance of resources like you did when you had small people inhabiting it. The days when you could just rent out a region and it was no big deal.
Oh, see, I've never known those days. Most of the renters I've spoken to rent one or two systems.
It did not used to be like that. People were getting multiple constellations to a region. Like, it was big, big renters, you know, and there were kind of smallish, highly adept groups of PvP people playing Overwatch, like Alex said. That's how it was back then, but it's...
Well, that's how it was in certain parts. I mean, specifically, I think you're talking about Fountain and Pandemic Legion.
That's the first thing that comes to mind, yeah.
Yeah. Well, they were commonly referred to as slumlords back in the day, because...
Yes, they were.
I think they were the first to pretty much come out front and say it, like, we're renting the space to you, we're not going to come defend you. And, like, that was sort of part and parcel with making that contract with them, is that, okay, we're basically paying for access. But access was as far as it went. The understanding was that Pandemic Legion just didn't give a shit about you. Before even that, I think it was the model that Danny was talking about, where you'd rent from somebody, but the understanding was that they'd protect your posses and protect your stuff. And PL is like, nope, we're just going to use this as a raw income model. There's no, like, social bonds going on here. It's not like a feudal system. This is a purely economic contract. We control the space. You want to use it, you pay us for the use, and that's as far as it goes. When we don't control it anymore, you know, you don't have to pay us anymore, basically.
Well, maybe that's what needs to change about the system. Because, I mean, really, if you think about it, some alliances, I know there are some alliances out there where you have to pay either a corporation fee or a per head fee. Isn't that the same thing as renting? Because you're paying to be, and you're like, oh, but I'm not just paying for space, I'm paying for ship reimbursement, etc. But you're still paying a fee in order to get benefits. You see what I'm saying? So I think... In a way, the meta still works as a renter one, but it's skewed slightly. There's a different light on it. It's not viewed as a slumlord. It's viewed as, you know, a rental fee. It's viewed as a membership fee. There
yeah.
you go.
That's a contentious point, though, because alliances can't really tax at the alliance level, so... In order for your alliance to have alliance-level stuff, the corporations have to be chipping in, either by donating moons that they're mining, or paying a membership fee of some kind, or something like that. I think the per-head thing, that sort of strikes me as very ranty. Just from conversations I've had with Nidia Masters back when we had Providence about different renting models. I've also heard, like, a licensing fee model where you pay a flat rate for your corp or your alliance, and then you can use whatever level space as much as you can. I've heard people do it per system. I've heard people do, like, the Alliance renting model, where it's, they make, like, a shell Alliance, and they have all kinds of corps join it. And I don't know what, I assume there's all kinds of different ways to pay for that and whatnot. But yeah, it's interesting, and it's also interesting to see the HBC and the CFC completely doing away with it, or for the most part doing away with it. And at the moment, they're winning the war of ideas, I think. Because the narrative has switched to the renting guys being the old guard. And the HBC being the good guys, you know, the egalitarians.
Goon HBC Conspiracy 2013.
Just moved it up a year, huh?
Well, you know, well, we already have the conspiracy for 2012, and, you know, we're only like a month and a week away from 2013. Why not? Why not just call it?
What do you think the 2013 conspiracy is going to be?
Rigging the CSM.
Mm.
Because Tanya's not going to run. No. That was rigged against the goons. Now the goons are going to rig it for them. Because since the Mitanni is not going to run, he is going to be the puppet master to seat, you know, the majority of the seats. And then, of course, there'll be the usual, you know, oh, well, this alliance or this corporation is a shell, etc. You know, just your usual spring conspiracy fare.
But according to Tweetfleet, Poetic Stanzil, etc., he already controls the CSM. Now, we're all puppets. In fact, he snot-shot at myself are the same person, as a matter of fact.
Oh yeah, I always forget about that.
Notice that we've never been elected on the CSM at the same time.
Well, there was that one time for 5 minutes this year.
Right, but conveniently, one of us was removed from the scene. Like Clark Kent and Superman.
So why wasn't it you?
Right?
Well, then it would be too obvious, clearly, you know.
And that's why you have to heckle yourself in order to, you know, keep the facade going, right?
Right, but since Mitanni can influence the CSM through me, he can act as the shadowy puppet master, right? See?
See that inception he did there?
Mitanni Gate was an inside job.
I knew it all along.
He was actually Mitanni controlling everything in the room, and he knew exactly how much he was drinking, but it was all non-alcoholic. The entire thing was completely manufactured.
So he didn't have all those shaker bombs?
No. It was apple juice the whole time.
That guy he told to go kill himself was actually killed by CCP employees 6 minutes after the event.
No loose ends!
Exactly.
Oh, this is wonderful. This is why I love Eve, because there. I mean, where else can you get this? I mean, aside from, you know, like normal everyday US news.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't know, I can think of a few sites. We need, like, the Eve Drudge Report, or the Eve Weekly Standard. I mean, besides Poetic's blog.
Poetic scares me sometimes, though, because he's all like, what do you mean this and this and blah, 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 and he'll like come out all rough at you and you're like, whoa, man.
Then I'm gonna delete my tweets.
Yeah, he actually posted a reasonable, okay, I'm done making fun of the CSM post on the vision document feedback thread, and I was like, what?
For just the document or like for the day or what?
It appeared to be for that thread only, but still, felt it was like a seeing a side of him we've never seen before.
Wow. Props from the Stanzel.
I would still love to have Poetic on the podcast, but apparently he doesn't do podcasts.
No, he doesn't. I've asked him to.
Neither did Ripper Tag, though. You know, so. Poetic, yeah. If you're less of a blogger than Ripper Tag, you know. I mean, I guess that's your business, but.
He doesn't listen to this podcast, dude. He specifically said that you sound like a whiny little girl.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Sorry to, you know, remind you, but.
Oh, I think about that comment every day.
Well, you know,
dominates what? My waking life.
It's better than having Weiler look at your picture and giving you, like, a personality profile.
What's the story behind that?
Wackweiler came on the podcast one time, and I always have, in Skype, I have a picture of myself. People know who I am, you know, it's on my Twitter, on all my social accounts, Facebook, Google Plus, whatever, I have nothing to hide.
Kind of a big deal.
Not really. I am a little bit of an egomaniac, though, sometimes. Depends on the day. But he came on the podcast, and he's like, oh, you should let me profile you. He's like, oh, I bet you I could profile you just by looking at your picture. And I'm like, what? And this was when Hallen was on the podcast. And so Hallen's like, do it. And I'm like, whoa, I don't know. And he did it. And there were some things that were like accurate. Like he was good at reading it. Like he was like, okay, well, you know, you're standing by your TV. It looks like it's this big and it's this tall and you're, you know, it's below your shoulder. So you're fairly short. You're about this tall, you know, stuff like comparison things. But then he was like, you look really tense. I'm like, well, yeah, I'm a high anxiety neurotic nerd. What are you talking about? Duh, I'm tense. And stuff like that. But it was like, he said a couple things that were like a little unsettling. And this was like all before an interview. So I was like, oh. And then of course, Hallen didn't like him at all. And was completely hostile to him during the entire interview. It was a mess. It was when Voices was a real circus.
All right, well, let's transition here to learning a little bit more about Danny. We've already had you on, but that episode got lost in the Ethernets.
Yes, people need to know how little I actually know about EVE Online. Let's do this.
But we did have partial amounts of that interview actually make it out, so...
We had the whole interview made it out. It was just, like, all the news and fun stuff that we chit-chat about was lost.
Mm. So... We've had some developments as far as your career in EVE. You've taken on a few new responsibilities in-game. You've joined a few new podcasts. You've got a new radio show. So let's hear what's new in your life.
Well, let's see. What's new in the world of Danny? Dear Diary, a couple months ago, I started a new role as a DJ on EVE Radio. It's been okay. Some of the management sucks. But I guess that's anywhere you work. No, I'm just kidding. So yes, I started with EVE Radio about 2 months ago. And it's different because it's live. And I don't get the luxury of editing, like how stupid I am, out a lot. So that kind of sucks. And people get to hear the full blown of my verbal tics. And those who listen to the podcast or listen to Voices podcast know that when I speak for an extended period of time, there are five things you are guaranteed to hear. But like, you know, definitely, exactly. You're going to hear those five words probably about 20 times in 20 minutes. And, you know, when you do radio, you don't get to edit. So there's that. And of course, that gets my neuroticism up. And I'm, you know, freaked out about that. But otherwise, it's really fun. I like to do the rock music in there.
The rock music.
The rock music. Yes, I'm also an old-timey prospector. That's a new hobby I picked up. I like to...
Like on the beach, finding quarters and shit?
No, pure old-timey prospector. I put on the leather hat, I get on my chaps, and I go into the hills, and I clean rocks looking for gold.
Assless chaps.
And I repeat frequently, there be gold in them thar hills!
You had me at chaps.
Aw, now I miss Angus. Assless chaps. Man, that was a long time ago. That's when Fly Reckless and EVE Commune were fighting, and I made some stupid-ass comment about assless chaps, about Angus wearing assless chaps or something.
Oh my.
Yeah, I like to say perverted things sometimes. But what else is new? Okay, so the pod pack. For a long time, there's been this meta feed called the EVE Online Pod Pack. And it's just been, you know, just a stationary meta feed that sits there. And for people who want to listen to all the pod packs or see, like, the vast majority of what is out there, can just go to this meta feed and get it all. And there's no, like, it's all EVE podcasts. And it's not everything, because people have the option of not participating. And some people have chosen not to participate. But I try to get, you know, as many podcasts as I can in there. And recently has escalated to a Skype channel. And I'm very happy that CCP is kind of backing this community initiative. And they're actually joining in the Skype channel. Right now, CCP Manifest is in there. And a couple other community reps will be joining in soon. So it's good to see the pod pack developing into what it is. I never thought it would be anything but like this, but I'm really glad that not only CCP is behind it, but also the other podcasters. And the Skype channel is cool because some podcasters who do not wish to be a part of the pod pack meta feed are a part of the Skype channel. And I think that's really cool, because that's really what it's about. It's about community. And I guess, I don't know, I'm going to stop talking for a little bit.
Yeah, I've joined the PodPack channel. It's a cool place to hang out. It's nice to get all the podcasters in one spot. One of the best things about our community has been the collaboration. A lot of the bloggers famously compete with one another, but I think the podcasters, for the most part, get along and we appear in each other's shows.
And, it is very incestuous.
It is nice, yeah.
It is, but like we jump on to each other's shows and things like that. And the reason why I went ahead and started the Skype channel, because it's something I had been hemming and hawing over for a while, but I caught a Skype conversation with another podcaster. I'm not name dropping because I don't want anyone to be cast in a bad light or anything like that, or not even a bad, I don't want to put anybody's business out there, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And I saw some tweets from a podcaster. They seemed a little upset that some other podcasters were cashing in on some opportunities. And it took me back to a time when I first started Voices from the Void, and I was looking at other podcasts, and it was there was a particular blogger who was trying to get into podcasting, and they put out two episodes, and both of those episodes had CCP people on it. And Voices was having a lot of trouble, I won't say having a lot of trouble breaking into the community, but making connections with different pillars of the community. And so when I saw that this guy could just boom, run out the gate, start a podcast, get CCP guests, I was like, man, I felt kind of small when I saw that. And I had to take a step back and put it into perspective. Okay, he's been blogging for a couple years. He does this in the community, that in the community. I just need to stay strong, make my connections. And seeing that tweet made me realize that I wasn't the only one that had those thoughts, and that there are other new podcasters out there who may be having difficulty. They could be having technical difficulty. They could be having difficulty just knowing where to start podcasting or what kind of podcast to make. They could have so many questions and they may not know where to turn to. And so I was like, you know what? This is a good opportunity to bridge that gap and to help those people who maybe they may not realize they need help, or they do realize they need help and they're not sure where they can turn. And so it's just, it's our place, you know, it's our place where we can hang and I can crab about LOL and we can talk about what's going on, you know, what dev blogs have been published, and we can also help each other out.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Like when you say the things about like the technical side of it, because that's, you know, that's something pretty rudimentary where like that knowledge is out there and it should be shared. I'll be honest though, like although I haven't been with Declarations of War from the start, like I feel like I've put a lot of work into it, and I think that the sad fact of life is that it's always been about who you know. Like I got to go do Alliance Tournament 5 because of who I knew. Like life is always going to be that way. Because I saw those same tweets that you did and I think I had a slightly different reaction. You made it a little more productive. I was a little bit more like, whatever, you know? And because, you know, the whole thing started because of discussion. Like, we were creating the discussion, albeit with incorrect information, but we still started a discussion. And, you know, these are the kind of things that stem from that. So, you know, there's always going to be the technical side of things where people can help, but then there, I think there's always going to be that side of where it's who you know and it's how well you can create discussion, and the quality of the product you can put out is always going to be a determining factor.
That is true. I mean, part of it is what you put into it, but I don't want to say I feel like I have an obligation, but I feel like if others view me as having it a little better off than some, I want to pass that on. I want to push that forward. I want to share that with others.
The thing is, I never really felt that way about you. I never really even considered it until, well, let's name him, Poetic, tried to turn relatively innocuous tweeting and you having special guests to talk about the New Eden Open into some kind of, like, favoritism conspiracy thing, as he is wont to do. You know, so I don't know how widespread that sentiment was in the first place, but I am glad that you turned his breathless ranting into something productive for the podcasting community. And I really think it has been. Like, I've gotten to know a lot of the podcaster guys a little bit better, like Black Huey, for, you know, just to name one, who's got a really nice podcast. And Kill 2, I'm finally in a channel with Kill 2. I've been, you know, watching his videos for the longest time, and it's cool to see him, be able to talk to him. Maybe someday he'll take me on a roam, who knows? So it's cool, and now we've got CCP backing it, and that's bringing a really important connection between CCP and the podcasting community that never used to be there. So I'm
exactly
down with it.
Exactly, and why hasn't that been there when we, you know, all we have to do is reach out. And that's one thing I've noticed about CCP. If you reach out to them, chances are they're going to be like, dude, that's awesome. Let's do it. Let's go.
Well, yeah, and that's just the thing. It's taken the initiative to, like, do that, and it's all the step there.
I think it's also a united front, too. I mean, I think all of us, not all of us, but at least I've tried to reach out to them at one point or another, and you sort of face a bit of a wall there of trying to get their staff to come out of the shell a little bit. But I think having the community as a united front, you know, having a one-stop shop they can go and look to for communication, I think lowers the barrier to them engaging with us. Going to one channel is, like, way different than talking to 12 different podcasters.
Exactly, and we started the little spreadsheet for who is who, and it's not just the vet podcasters. Like, Down the Pipe is a new podcast that started up, and they, I think they've only had their first episode, and they're in there. And the first day the channel started, they were having trouble with iTunes, you know, and so then they were getting that help, and then it's just, I don't know, I haven't seen any evidence that this is going to be a bad thing, you know. And it's also not just podcasts. Like, I have a couple people from Eve Radio in there too, like DJ Wiggles, who's one of the Eve Radio managers, is in there, and the guys who do New Eden Live. And so it's not, you know, just the podcast community, but, well, I mean, I guess I consider those things podcasting too, because it's Eve Talk. You know, and who knows, maybe there are some podcasters, because Placid does Podside, which is live, you know, and maybe that could open up some doors for some people who are interested in doing live. I know Voices from the Void, when we started, we were able to do straight 60-minute episodes, and we got syndicated on Eve Radio. That may be a great opportunity for other podcasters getting started. You know, my podcast doesn't do need anymore because I'm lazy. But, you know, someone who wants to put in that time editing could certainly get that done and get that extra exposure from their podcast. So there are, like, unlimited connections. And once, you know, all the CCP community gets in there, there's that. Now, I will admit, this is not completely altruistic. I have my own nefarious reasons for doing this, and one of those reasons is projects. And during the New Eden Open, there was a vacuum. There was this empty void that needed to be filled, and people didn't know who the teams were. And Soldering from the Suddenly Spaceships had put up a post, hey, who are these people? What's going on? Post something. And then Frank from WonderBet was like, oh, well, you know, here's a list. You know, yeah, who are these people? And he seconded that. And there was this cry of, who are these teams? So I was like, well, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to do interviews. Man, it is hard trying to fit in all those teams in 6 days. And it would have been so much better if I could have gone to a channel and been like, hey, y'all, I need you to help me do interviews for the new Eden Open. Come on. So it's not, so I don't think it's completely altruistic. And I will be doing that. But, you know, it's a talent pool. It's a talent pool. It's a help channel. It's a way to bridge the gap. It's a way to make connections. It's whatever really the podcasters want it to be.
All right. Excellent. Plug my own stuff for right now. And, of course, I am talking about our sponsors, Eve Timecode. Buy 14 Eve Timecodes, get one free. EveTimecode.com, where your business counts. And right now they've got a promotion, Fall Fun 2012 as the code, gives you a 5% discount on all purchases over $64. So if you are, you know, if you have to pay rent to some dude in 00, it'd be a perfect opportunity for you to go out and buy some Eve time codes. Go for it. And they are also very supportive of the community as well. Pretty much any event I have ever run or tried to promote, ETC has always been there, like, hey, can we help? Or here's a whole bunch of Plex, give it away. Or sponsoring Alliance tournament teams. Like Big did with the New Eden Open this year.
The Summer Blank.
Summer Blank, right. They gave 10 billion, I think it was, to each team.
To each team.
Wow. That is something else. So, supporting these community sites like Summer, like Eve Time Code, very important, guys. Go out there. If you're going to give your hard-earned money over for some Plex and for some time codes, do it from one of these sites. They'll support the community. Don't just give it to CCP. Hey, come on.
Yeah, and I mean, CCP is getting their cut anyway. Don't worry. But let me tell you something about Diane from EveTimeCode.com. This lady flew from Phoenix to Austin, last year, to attend it's the GDCO party I threw. Where CCP came. Yes, not only did she attend, she sat at the front desk and checked people in for me and passed out prizes and passed out the little meeting gifts. So, I mean, she's a really cool person, and she showed up and she was like, can I help you with anything? I was like, I need somebody for the front, and she's like, okay, I'll do it. And she sat there and she did it the whole time, didn't complain. She helped do judging for some of the competition. She is just sweet as sugar.
That is adorable. Moving on to contract wrap up, we do not actually have contracts to talk about because of the Thanksgiving Day break. But we will have some exciting stuff coming up in Providence to talk to you about on the next podcast. For right now, we sort of spent our time going after Deck Shield. For those of you who've been following the podcast, we've been, quote, trapped, end quote, in a war with Deck Shield, and there's zillions and zillions of corps that keep joining and leaving every damn day. And it's been the most boring war I've ever seen. Like, for all the hype for Deck Shield and like all the attention CCP is giving to their exploit, which is a bad one, admittedly, but I could not be less impressed. We've been at war for them for weeks. We've killed like one thing. They've never killed any of our stuff, and we've only seen two organized fleets of theirs. They're all from the same group, and they've all run away from us each time we come up against them. So I'm not impressed, Deck Shield. Can't wait to unwar you on the 4th so we stop getting like 24 messages a day about people joining and leaving your alliance.
So what's the purpose? Have they come after you? Like, any missioners? Anyone in war?
Not in noir. I mean, I assume they're doing something somewhere, but if you look at their kill board on Battle Clinic, it's just not that active for this huge corp that they are, this huge alliance. There's just not a lot of PvP going on. And they claim to have these tens of thousands of characters trapped in wars, but they're not doing anything with it. Near as I can tell, it's just griefing us by spamming the notification box.
That is pretty darn annoying.
We'll get like, Noir Mercenary Group has declared war against X. X has surrendered, Noir Mercenary Group. Or, you know, or war has been declared invalid, or whatever. And we'll get like, easily a dozen to two dozen of those a day.
Every war and every offshoot war ends up producing like at least three or four males.
It's psychological warfare, man. They're getting into your head.
Must be.
That's what I think.
We also, despite having this war deck against like, oh, we're trapping these tens of thousands of people, we actually had a hauling operation called Operation Rake. Basically, taking all of our ships from all over Eve and moving them all to our staging system and upgrading the fits to our new alliance standards, which was quite an undertaking. It took me 2 days to do it. I mean, you just didn't realize all the stuff I had in, like, I had like a damnation in LOSEC from a contract 2 years ago that I brought down but never actually fit. So I sold it, you know, and that was like plus 200 something million. And I had a Dominix in LOSEC from one time when we bashed a small tower in that system and I never moved it out. Like, all these random ass ships just lying around. We had tons of these things. And so we just put everything together into our Amar and nearby Amar systems and swapped out all the fits. And we took a look at our wormhole and got all the stuff out of there that was outdated. I would call it spring cleaning, but it's fall.
Well, see, and that's I don't think people realize how commendable that is, because if anyone ever like hacked into my account and logged in, they would have to instantaneously know I am a woman, because I have shit strewn from one side of the universe to the other. It's just everywhere. It's a mess, and I mean massive quantities of just things.
I was like, really, all right. Like, I had emptied all my stuff out of our wormhole a couple months before this, and I had never really got all that spread out, so I really didn't have that much moving to do. I didn't realize everybody was so six sheets to the wind.
Yeah, I mean, well, we'd have all these contracts everywhere, and we're bringing three or four ships a pop, and when it's done, we just move one or two of them, realistically. Like, I had, I bought a Sentinel for our contract in Otsella a while back. And I had also had, like, a Guardian, and I had a Sacrilege, and I had all this stuff, and I moved everything, but I still had the Guardian and the Sentinel there. So I had another Guardian, right, in Amar that I had been using in the meantime, but I still had the spare Guardian that was, like, 20 jumps away. And what if my Guardian gets popped, and I needed for the same operation? You know, am I going to fly 40 jumps? Forget about it. So there was a lot of, like, sharing hauling assets, making sure that people were getting carrier jumps and Orca moving and all that sort of stuff together. But yeah, the war deck didn't really bother us the whole time. It's awfully convenient.
Noir Academy is now recruiting. We are looking for smart players who are looking to learn small gang PvP in an immersive training environment. In a program designed for new pilots as well as grizzled 00 vets, learn the ins and outs of merc life, including efficiency and ethics, hostile NullSec survival skills, FCing, and more. As one of Eve's oldest and most respected mercenary outfits, Noir runs a tight ship, but we always strive to have fun doing it. If you want to be part of a high-end merc PvP organization that always strives to be better tomorrow than it is today, Noir is the place for you, and Noir Academy is the place to start. Apply today through our forums at noirmercs.com.
This week in Mercs, also speaking of Deck Shield, one of their constituent corporations called Viking Brigade, which I presume is supposed to be pronounced Viking Brigade, but is German. they were in deck shield and then left deck shield, but they still had permanent wars or something like that. And they kept trying to surrender and I wouldn't accept it. And Tora Bushido conned me. He's like, why aren't you accepting the surrender for Viking Brigade? Like, well, because they keep offering to surrender for Zero Isk. That's not cool. Yeah, keep in mind, these wars were not a problem at all. So I was trying to get like 500 mil out of all the corps trying to surrender. And no one actually took it, but I was still hoping, you know. And he's like, well, why don't you just surrender, man? They're trying to join our alliance. Just surrender. I'm like, no, I'm not going to accept this surrender, man. And I offered like 250 mil, and he still wouldn't take it. He wound up getting really mad at me. But somehow, I guess they got around it, or maybe the reason that they thought they had to surrender didn't actually apply, because Viking Brigade joined Marmite Collective, I noticed. So whatever technical problem they were having got sorted out. No, I didn't accept a surrender for Viking, so I don't know if they found a way to retract it on their own, or if it wasn't a mutual war and it expired. I don't know what the story was, but Marmite Collective is now plus one Viking Brigade, and hopefully Tora is not mad at me anymore.
You're such a troll.
Hey man, they wanted to use this deck shield exploit. They didn't think about who they were going to war with. And I'm not speaking of Viking Brigade in particular, all these corps that have the mutual war thing and keep trying to surrender. Which, I guess, first of all, I don't know how that's even happening, because they're supposed to, like, when a corp joins an alliance and leave, they're supposed to have, like, a bill generated, and if you don't pay the bill, it's supposed to expire. But it doesn't seem to be consistently happening with Deck Shield. Either that, or it's happening so much that I can't keep track of it all. I don't have no idea, but there's definitely some funny stuff going on with the corps joining and leaving Deck Shield, as far as which ones take the mutual wars, which ones take the regular wars, and the notifications that go back and forth between the two.
Sounds like you need to put in a petition.
Sounds like CCP needs to update the UI.
Or that.
Which hopefully they will be doing. Eve News! HBC has declared war against Stainwagon and Esoteria residents, which includes like Coven and those folks. This is going to be interesting. I am excited.
Well, you know, there's a rumor going around saying that PL is now the new test alliance of EVE Online. So this war could really go either way.
There's obviously a massive, massive numbers advantage to the HBC. But Stainwagon is one of the most... I'd say they were really the muscle behind AAA's power block. But for some reason they fractured off. I'm not exactly sure what happened between Stainwagon and AAA. They used to be the closest of possible allies. And then not so much. But they're like really old, really hungry PvPers, and they've not really had their space disturbed in like 2 years.
Like three or four.
Yeah, so they're rich as hell.
Yeah, well, I mean, who wants to go all the way to Stain and Esoteria for PvP?
I don't know, you tell me, Goonswarm.
Hey, I don't think I've ever been in Stain. Our mercenary group.
We've been down in Stain. We've been in Esoteria, too. We've been in Paragon Soul. Been all up in that shit.
You've been all up in it. In it real good.
Hell yeah. Man, I just don't know. Because on the one hand, I'm like, well, HBC, massive number advantage. They got Pandemic Legion, just gonna roll. But on the other hand, I know that Stain and Coven are very persistent. Much like old school AAA. So I think even if they lose systems, they're going to keep hitting them. And they own all this sob space, but they really are, as the name would imply, based in Stain. So there's a certain amount of their assets that's just not going to be touchable, you know? Unless HBC really wants to do hell camps for like weeks on end, but I don't think they're going to be able to do that.
And, well, and that whole Stainwagon Brigade, they already said they were going to lose space, but they were just going to try and make it as costly as possible, so...
And you also have to remember that if they are, you know, they are this old group, they are... If they still have their strength in PvP tactics, there are ways to outdo a blob. You know, well-placed bomber fleets, high-damage, long-range sniper fleets, you know, you got things like Munin fleets, Tornado fleets. If you can work small gang elements like those well against a blob, you can do serious damage. So, you know, numbers aren't everything, but, you know, a well-placed Dictor and some high-grade DPS can do amazing things.
Yeah, they could do some damage, but then you run into the paradigm of the ISK war not really mattering anymore. Like, there's really no conceivable way that you could wear down HBC, that you could make it so that a conflict they're in is too costly for them to continue. I mean, the closest that you saw happen was the AAA grind and 4-0 before Initiative and Raiden swapped sides, and AAA lost all those allies. There was, like, massive losses on the HBC side, and they were running in the red, and they just got a loan from Pandemic Legion. They upgraded their fleet doctrines to a proper counter for the AAA Tengu fleets, and that was that. They are back in the green now.
Yeah, you can't win it on an ISK front. It would have to be morale-based. So you would just have to keep just wearing them down and grinding them down and suffering them loss after loss. So you'd have to stick to your game for a good portion of time. And you'd have to hit them frequent and hit them hard because you have to wear down their morale. But that can be done. I mean, you know, you have to remember entities as large as HBC and CFC, they go to war for extended periods of time. And it does wear down on a pilot. You know, after so long, a pilot's going to be like, I just want to go rad, or I just want to go do Sanctum, or I'm going to go play LOL, or I'm going to go do this. So if you are hitting them where it hurts, if you hit them from a morale perspective, you can swing things, but you have to play it. You have to play it right.
Well, we'll see what happens on that one. That's something I'm going to be watching very intently. Also on the conflict front, but in an entirely different setting, the New Eden Open, something Danny has been following quite closely. We've got the final weekend coming up.
Oh my god! It's going to be awesome.
Danny, since you are so intimately familiar with these teams, you've done interviews with tons of the captains, would you mind giving our listeners a breakdown of the... of the teams that are going into the finals, and if you're willing to commit, pick a favorite.
Well, I hate to say it, my favorite's been picked for a little bit now, and that favorite is actually the Expendables, which is the Hydra Dark Side hybrid team, but it's a portion of the Alliance Tournament 10 teams, but it is the Russian sides of those two alliances, which makes it incredibly interesting. It's an interesting dynamic they have going, but it's led by Heart SP, who has a lot of tournament theory crafting and a lot of tournament experience behind him. And they had a little bit of a hiccup early on. They lost one of their matches to the Huns. Or, no, they lost their match to Ronin and Pixies. They lost their match to Ronin and Pixies, but ever since then, they've just been steamrolling. I want to say it was Saturday. They brought out a setup with, like, two Vangles and a Malice, and it was one of the first sight. Well, it was the second sighting of Alliance Tournament winnerships. The first one was actually a Frecky, which is really cool to see that on screen. I hadn't seen one before, and I think that one was from Alliance Tournament 6. So the matches coming up are going to be Reputation Cartel versus Goggle Wearing Internet Crime Fighters, which is a loser brackets match, and the other losers bracket match is going to be XXX Mighty, who incidentally lost three Malices last weekend. Oh, mercy. It was painful because the pilot did not turn on his links. Oh, my Jesus. It was... I could not believe it when I heard it. Could not believe it.
That is a shame. That dude would be so kicked out of the Alliance.
Well, but you have to remember it's Quok Uck, and he's pretty space rich. So it's probably a bat of an eye. Like, they probably yelled at him, and they'll probably troll him for ages. But, I mean, really, when you're that level of space rich...
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. It makes me feel bad. My wallet right now is feeling bad about itself. But the other loser brackets match is going to be XXX Mighty versus the Expendables. Now, those two will go on. Now, between Reputation Cartel and Goggle Wearing Internet Crime Fighters, which Goggle Wearing Internet Crime Fighters is suddenly spaceships, the Reputation Cartel is the Godfathers. Between those winners, they will go on to fight Haseen Hatama's team. Not sure where that team is comprised of. Did not get a chance to speak to them. And then between XXX Mighty and the Expendables, that winner will go on to fight Ronin and Pixies, which is, of course, Ronin Reloaded. And from there, you'll have your brackets, and it's going to be wonderful. And then the other interesting thing about this tournament is that on the final day, which will be December 2nd, It will be the best 3 of 5 matches. So the teams will be fighting each other repeatedly over a period of time. So it'll be and they'll be doing the bans and all that kind of stuff. So it will be interesting to see how the teams cope under pressure and cope under change.
That's something we've never seen in a EVE tournament, like the multiple matches in that way. So I'm actually really excited to see how the meta evolves over the course of a couple matches. You see it in League of Legends a lot because that's sort of a standard championship format for them. They'll play 3 or 4 matches in a row and then move that team on to the next level, whichever team is winning. And you can really see in the bans, like, if a champion is really dominating, they'll take that champion away from that player on the next one through a ban. But that also frees up whatever they ban the first time, which could be better, could be worse. And you see a lot of the team comps evolving. So it's going to be really cool to see, especially if it's a very meta-conscious team like Expendables, who are very on top of that sort of stuff.
Well, you are seeing that sort of thing on a smaller scale, and it's usually on a day-by-day basis. So if a particular ship starts doing well early on in the tournament, you'll see it get banned a lot later on. So you'll see shifts in banning, like maybe one day you'll see a lot of Scimitar logistics bans early on, but towards the end of the day, you'll see things start shifting to ECM. So you'll see things like Rooks and... Kitsunes, Griffins, things like that getting banned out because they're doing so strongly early on. And so you'll see trends like that, but it's more on a day-by-day basis. So the early day matches will kind of set the tone for what gets brought to the field later on. And then you'll have some teams who will just come up in something totally unexpected and throw everyone off.
It's a cool dynamic to see because we've never seen it before in the Alliance tournament. Teams that are in not being, you know, relegated to just within the Alliance have teams, you know, to kind of see who's buddy-buddy and who's going to pair up with each other. Because I'd have to imagine that, you know, a lot of these relationships were formed over the course of, you know, several years, if not more, fighting together, training together, maybe fighting against each other. And so it's kind of cool to see how these people pair up when they aren't restricted by just Alliance bounds in the tournament.
On the dev blog front, we've got a couple dev blogs to talk about. One is from Team Game of Drones, and it's talking about the Unified Inventory. Turtle, do you want to discuss this one?
Yeah, the Team Game of Drones is coming out with what actually looks like a fairly long list of upgrades for the Unified Inventory. Most notably, to my eyes, were very steep performance upgrades for the Retribution client that's coming, especially looking at things like bookmarks, large trees. You know, if you have a pause with a lot of stuff on it, those item trees get really weird. And there's also some improvements and expansions coming for the front end ease of use things. you know, you'll get little colored icons that tell you, you know, what level of access you have to corp hangers, and just bits like that. So it's cool to see them following up on their previous features with, you know, kind of some things that could be considered even new features as well.
I think the most amazing thing is the graphs, or are the graphs. Oh my god. Oh my god. Did you see the graphs?
Yeah, bookmarks, I think in particular, have been probably the longest standing UI issue in the game. I mean, bookmarks have just been a problem since the game was started, so it's definitely something that needed to be handled, and those performance improvements are going to be fantastic.
It's good to see them sticking with the inventory and keep on developing. It's a very encouraging sign, because as maybe new players don't realize, but vets surely know, when CCP puts something in, chances that it actually, you know, gets touched within 2 years is a relatively recent phenomenon. So it's really cool to see them actually doing it for the inventory and really committing to getting it right, 100% right.
Speaking of 100% right,
war decks. CCP broke them. Will they fix them? That's what we're all sort of thinking about right now. So far, looking better, I guess would be the thing to say.
Mostly yes.
Yes. Alright, so they're going to do 2 iterations on this expansion, and I've got developer word on it that they will be doing more with the 0.1 releases for Retribution, but so far the stories are: the aggressor having the option to retract a war made mutual by the defender. This effectively neuters mutual wars. The only effect of declaring a war mutual will be basically you don't have to pay for it anymore, which will be great for red versus blue. Takes away some of the consequences people were looking for in the old war deck system. It was sort of weak. People wanted it to be a little more meaningful, and they tried that in a way that wasn't well thought out, and now is, they're completely walking it back, basically. And the other one is regards to war deck costs. They're changing the scaling cost. The way it was before, they started at some random number in like 150, and up to, I think it was 7,000 something, there would be an incremental cost for each member on the target that you were war decking. Well, now it's going to start at 51, and it's going to cap up at 2,000. So it's going to reach that 500 mil cap much more soon. But realistically, the number of alliances with more than 2,000 members is pretty damn short. So I don't think it's going to be a huge problem. And in exchange, I think this is a very good thing, the war deck multiplier is going away. So in the interim between Inferno and now, you had these massively increased war deck costs up to 500 mil. And every time you war deck somebody, that would get multiplied over and over again. So you could have like 3 or 4 billion ISK war decks. It's just insane. So that's finally getting walked back. Well, there's still more to do. A lot to do with the UI, a lot to do with people deck dodging and things like that. Maybe some tweaks to the ally system, hopefully. I'll be working with CCP into the winter, probably into February, actually, to try to get everything that we can get in terms of fixes to the war deck system so it is as functional and consequential as possible, while still being balanced for attackers and defenders. And there's a lot of cool stuff that can happen with war, especially now that nuclear repair is going away with Crime Watch. And it's just a shame to see it languishing with these bad mechanics.
So do you think that this is going to breathe life back into the mercenary community, or do you think it's going to take more than these changes?
I don't know about breathe life into, but I think it'll stop the bleeding that we have right now. And the past year has been just absolutely brutal for mercs in terms of people dropping out. So I don't know if, you know, I mean, there's going to be a recovery for sure, but I don't think it's going to happen overnight. It's going to take a lot of time. And I think with the new bounty hunting feature, you're probably going to see the new corps coming up, sort of incorporating that and expanding from that. and then going into Wardex, and then going into 00, then going into wormholes. But for right now, I think it'll probably stop the bleeding. Stop people from dropping out.
Well, that's good, at least. You know, it's a band-aid. It's not the best of situations, but like you said, it'll at least stop the bleeding. You mentioned the bounty hunting, though. Do you think that will help with the mercenary profession? The way that they'll have this now, where you can, like, sell rights and, well, not only sell rights, but you can also bounty corporations and alliances.
I think the bounty of corporations and alliances would be... It would basically replace merc fees if players could set the rate at which it pays out. But they can't. So it's going to be that flat 20% rate, which is a little low for a lot of the more veteran corps. However, you might see this being sort of a gateway where corps that don't have a real reputation yet, they can say, okay, just place a bounty on this corporation, assign it to us. And that way there's less risk of scamming because they don't really have a history yet. So they can, instead of just having to pay, I mean, you should probably do your first couple contracts for free anyway to build that up. But in that interim between you starting off and you having a reputation of being able to charge a lot on top of the damage, I think it's going to be a really interesting middle ground that hopefully some mercenary corporations are going to take advantage of. As for bountying in particular, you may. Assassination and bounty hunting contracts are one of the most frequently requested services of mercenary corps and one of the least frequently accepted because of, you know, sec loss from suicide ganking and the difficulty of getting a pod on high sec and all that stuff. So I definitely think this opens the door. Now, a lot of it's dependent on players actually getting behind the new bounty system and putting bounties on people and selling the kill rights. So, you know, player confidence in the feature is strong and they're putting bounties on people, I think you'll definitely see Mercenary sort of pivoting to take advantage of it. You can definitely see it happening.
Very cool. That's all I can think of is that bounties are going to be a gateway drug for mercenary work.
Now they're also doing a couple module changes. Got the micro jump drive, which I'm like, And we've got the salvage drone, which I'm like, yeah.
It doesn't actually loot though and bring the stuff to you, it just salvages. Lazy.
Well, it's not a loot drone. But you know, you can do some interesting things with it.
What caught me on the micro jump drive was the fact that it's interdiction immune, so the only thing that's going to stop it is a warp scram, albeit it's got a 12-second spool-up time, but that's a pretty cool concept to have battleships that could, you know, not really be locked down by interdictors, per se. Maybe coming into hostile situations, especially, like, the situation that pops out in my mind is trying to get battleships through a gate that's camped.
I'm less convinced, because I think if you're jumping into that camp, okay, you're going to hop out to 100 kilometers. They're still going to tackle you. It'll be cool for getting out of bubbles, I guess, for really slow ships, but I think that is more of a convenience thing. Like, if you're one of those alliances that bubbles through 00 space all the time, you know, now you don't have to have your battleships with a travel delay kind of thing. But I don't know about in practice use. I mean, I can think of maybe if you're like the Navy APOX perhaps could have a use of this. But then you're still leaving your carriers behind. You're leaving your logistics ships behind.
Scorpions, things that, you know, could scatter to different points around and still be effective.
Yeah, Scorpion might work for that. Scorpion might also work for, like, the Burst Scorp. That would be a very interesting way to deploy it.
Oh, I have an idea. What if you put them on, like, Dominix's, drop your sentries, and then jump out? Oh, that'd be hot. You know it would.
Yeah, it'd be kind of interesting. Alright, so maybe there are a couple of gameplay uses. I'll be very interested to see what Elise Randolph and Pandemic Legion come up with for this, because I have a feeling they're going to be at the cutting edge of it.
Aren't they always?
Alright, also our second sponsor, Wunderbet.com, www.wunder-bet.com, that's W-U-N-D-E-R. They are featuring New Eden Open Betting, so put some money down. They're also going to be doing future events like Alliance tournaments, Dust tournaments, maybe some smaller events as well.
Yeah, they're also branching out to run book on things that are out of EVE now, like NFL and BCS college football games, Champions League if you like soccer. So yeah, you can bet your risk on real life stuff now.
Follow them on Twitter, at Wunderbet. Follow them on Facebook, /Wunderbet. And they're going to get a lot of promotional information putting out through those social media outlets. So follow them, like them on Facebook, go to the site, bet some money, get rich.
Yes, they're very nice guys. They helped me out a lot with the New Eden Open, so support them, damn you.
And our final segment, some CSM coverage.
CSM don't do shit.
Yeah, we don't do anything.
You guys are terrible.
We never stand up to CCP or, you know, advocate for the players. We're always reacting and trying to be political.
You guys are puppet states.
Puppets of Goon Swarm and CCP at the same time, somehow.
And the CIA. Oh, no, that's just Goon Swarm.
That's right.
Oh, dear. But yeah, this letter that you guys did well. I have to say, I was a little nervous. I saw the link. I was like, oh, Lord, what is this? And I opened it, and I was like, that's what's up. Until you got to the, like, game mechanics part, and then I was like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. But it looks great.
Well, what we're talking about is, if you have not read it, go over to Jita Park. It is a sticky. Definitely check it out. It is the CSM's vision of EVE development. And the backstory is, we were at a meeting with CCP Ripley, talking about some business questions that CCP had, and they wanted the CSM's feedback on why certain trends were happening and how they could take advantage, or, you know, that sort of thing. And it came up that they were doing future planning right now, and I saw an opportunity for giving CCP a little proactive direction, which is something that the CSM has not really been great at. There's a lot of passivity on the CSM this year. I am not one of those people. And neither a few other people that were also in the channel. So I was like, alright, let's do this. I pitched an idea to her. Hey, why don't we give you maybe the CSM's take based on all our experience as players of the game and all the contacts that we make with people and all our you know, finger on the pulse of the community type stuff. Let us put all that perspective into a document for you and give you what we think that CCP strategic planning should look like. And rather than laugh it out, she actually seemed very excited about the idea, and she laid down a few ground rules, including the deadline and what she was looking for. And we hopped to it, and I guaranteed we would give it to her by that Monday, and we did. And there was a lot of debate and discussion within the CSM as to what exact form it should take, but I think we delivered as close to instructions as possible, and I think we really did a pretty good job with it. We had like 2 pages of sort of general development strategy, and then we had 2 pages of examples of, hey CCP, if you were to adopt the strategy we're talking about, here's conceivably what your expansions might look like, which I felt was a necessary step, because you can't just say to CCP, oh, don't worry about it, you can have new players, you know, being attracted to EVE while also addressing the veteran concerns. Take our word for it. Like, that's not very persuasive. But you say, if you say that and then go, now here's concretely what it could look like, I thought that was a lot more convincing. And there's been a lot of contention. Well, not a lot. I'd say most of the contention has been on not the development strategy that the CSM put out, but on the specific features that CCP or that the CSM decided to include on our concrete suggestions to CCP, which I think speaks well for the approach that we decided to advocate. And hopefully CCP got that message as well. I know CCP Ripley sent the document around to the other teams. So initially we sent this just to her. She found it fittable to send pretty much everybody, like the heads of all the development teams, people above her as well. So I think the document was well received on CCP's end, and for the most part has been well received by the public. And now we're just sort of waiting to see what CCP will do with it, if anything.
Yeah, I noticed a lot of the getting stuck on features in the thread, and there was a lot of, you know, conversation about things that weren't really related. Well, they were related, but just indirectly to the document. But I think one of the things that really blew me away with the document was splitting the Eve population by its proper demographics. Because I think a lot of people forget Eve is a one-of-a-kind game, so you can't use standard measurements on it. You know, 18 to 35 male female doesn't really work with Eve. You know, you need the actual demographics, your veterans, your new players, your perspectives, your bigger old vets. You do need that division because that's who you have to market to. And a lot of people ask me, like, oh, how can I get my girlfriend to play Eve, or what's a good way to get chicks to play Eve? You can't think of it like that. You just have to have a good game, and they will come. It's like the field of dreams. If you build it, they will come.
Yeah, we don't need a vagina's only entrance. You know, we just need
exactly.
a really appealing game that people want to play. All people.
And if you have a vagina's only entrance, I can guarantee you it's going to turn away a lot more people than it's going to bring in. Because icky. No one wants to touch that.
Or do they? Well, there's an interesting article, well, interesting in quotes, article on Mitanni.com about sexism and Eve and the need for women to have a safe space within the community. And you run Women Gamers of Eve, so
no,
maybe you'd like to touch. You don't run it?
No, I stepped down. One of the other admins did something I really did not agree with, and so I have separated myself from that channel. But some ways I do, some ways I do not. I know that for some women, it's easier when you're in a male-dominated environment, it's easier to ask questions that you think might be stupid to other females. And I say that as a person, like when I was a little girl, I used to go to something called Girls Incorporated, and it was a center only for girls. And, you know, we got to do things like martial arts or learn how to crochet, whatever your heart's content. So to me, growing up as a person outside of EVE Online, safe places like that are okay. They've been a part of my life. And so I don't have any ill feeling for it. However, you start treading on difficult territory when it starts turning into a girls-only club as opposed to a safe haven. And especially in EVE Online, it can get easy to get those lines blurred, because then you have situations like when all the stuff between Black Legion and NC Dot broke out, conversations that happened in the Women Gamers of EVE were leaked. And the impression that one of the people in the conversation had was that, oh, this is a safe place. I should be able to talk about whatever I want. And no, that was never the intention of Women Gamers of Eve. It was a connection channel. And we told people when we brought them into the channel, do not say anything that you would not say in local. Because there are people from enemy organizations here. There are people that can spread the information and who might spread it. So you start playing with some dangerous social triggers when you start talking about women, you know, women's only things.
You heard it here first, Women Gamers of Eve, the real spy masters in play.
Yeah, what I heard is that women are responsible for Goonswarm taking over Eve. Is that fair to say?
I think that...
You've let goons into the Garden of Eden, you know? You broke the dock rose. It's all the women's fault.
Whatever. But I will say that I think women have a great potential when it comes to spying. It's a difficult... I don't know. Like, I don't want anyone to think... I'm not a spy. I'm going to say that. I am not a spy. However, I can say with some assurity that I've been let on some TeamSpeak servers. I've been told some things. And I'm not sure how much of it is I'm trustworthy seeming. But this is as I'm a goon. Like, people find it easy to forget I'm a goon. And to forget who I'm aligned with. And I'm not an untrustworthy person. And I... I do my best to make sure that things that are told to me in confidence stay in confidence. But if I were a spy, holy crap, I'd be the best spy in EVE Online because I get so much information. You know, and it's hard to know, is that because I'm a quote-unquote personality? Is it because I'm a female? Or is it because I am, you know, just an incarnation of a succubus and can draw the breath of men? I don't know.
Whoa. Looks like you got ahead of yourself there.
You had me at suck.
All right, let's get a little bit back to the development strategy. What do you think about EVE appealing to new players, either from what's talked about in the document or just from your own perspective? Like, what do you think would be the thing that CCP should be pushing for that will both draw in the new players and be palatable to the existing ones?
I would say beginner's features, because a lot of times, and I've talked to other players about this before, a lot of times, you know, you get people in, and between that one week and 1 month period, they drop off. You know, they're like, oh, I tried it and it's not for me, it's not that. And really, I don't know how CCP can do it, but EVE is such a social game. I just think that a lot of these people who are doing solo missions or solo arcs or solo mining, if they were urged to the more social side of EVE, if they were gently and kindly, you know, had their faces rammed into that, they'd stay a lot longer, because that, I mean, at least for me and a lot of people that I talk to, that is a big draw to the game. Also, going back to the new beginners features, that's kind of an across-the-board thing, because remember when RVB got real big for a while? There were a lot of old vets going back and just doing RVB, getting in their rifters, going, crashing into people's faces. And so I think that's a very telling sign that if easy entry content is good enough, people across the board will like it, because it's something new, it's something different to do, and it's just plain old good content. And a lot of EVE players are incredibly easily satisfied as long as it's plain old good, solid content.
A good game? Shudder.
EVE is a good game, but it's just, you know, there's a lot of loose ends, and sharp cliffs, and pointy sticks. And terrible things.
I definitely agree at pushing people to the more social aspect of EVE. I mean, the CSM had like an hour-long conversation with the new player content people at the last summit, and we laid out like so many suggestions that they could have picked from to, you know, engage with new players and push them toward corporations and such. It just feels like, even though CCP realizes that they need to do this, they're hesitant. They're always hesitating, taking that extra step to like actually pushing people toward player corps. And I don't know if that's because they're afraid of favoritism, or
that's exactly what I think.
They're worried about people like a screening process or something, because they're afraid we'll break the new customers or what. But like, it's really shooting them in the foot, I feel.
I think it's favoritism. I absolutely 100% think it's favoritism. They have an extreme fear of favoritism. And they don't want to put themselves in a situation where that can become a huge issue. And it's going to be an issue, because you have great new player entities like Goonswarm Federation and Testing Alliance, Please Ignore, who are fantastic with newbies. However, the catch is they only draw their newbies from their predetermined social contacts. And so you really can't advertise those agencies because they are known for scamming. So if you advertise everyone fairly, there's going to be a certain portion of your newbies you're feeding to the sharks. But at the same time, I don't really think Goonswarm or Test would really give a shit.
Well, there's Goonswarm, there's Test, there's also like Agony and Eve University or Academy, Vito Academy, if it's still up and running.
But those organizations aren't going to scam people that don't come from something awful or Reddit.
Right, exactly. So why can't you... I mean, people at CCB have a brain. And if they don't feel confident that they could screen through the community, the CSM could feasibly do it somehow. You know, I mean, it's not taking place in a vacuum. Like, a lot of these organizations, we know who they are. You know, we know that if you're coming from something awful or from Reddit or... You know, if you know somebody personally there. Goonswarm and Test are fantastic ways to get in. And we also know that if you're a new player and you have no clue and you're not coming from there, they'll take every cent of ISK that you have without a second thought. We know this. Like, why do we have to pretend like we don't know this? And we also know that there are plenty of groups out there, Ouch is another one, that are fantastic newbie training corporations with good reputations that probably will not screw over the new recruits too badly. And, I mean, I get favoritism, I get that sensitive, but I guess it comes down to, like, what's more important? Seeming like you're not favored, like showing favoritism to a particular newbie training corp? Or getting all those new customers, you know, and getting these players to stick around for a while. Because that's ultimately the decision, I think. Personally, I'd take my chances and grow the community a little bit.
But it can backfire so badly. If you get a good portion of your people getting scammed, or if someone gets really loud about this favoritism, there's so many variables that could go terribly, terribly wrong. And with CCP on the fragile uptake that it is from the mess that was in Karna, I don't think it would be in the wisest decision to do right now. Now, a solid expansion or two down the line, they may be able to take that risk. But right now, I would not, like, I don't see that risk being a good payoff as of, like, right now.
Alrighty. Anything else to say about the development strategy, you guys? Which, I know we sort of wandered quite a bit with this conversation, but to tie
That's
it
awesome.
Off...
That's awesome. You should read it.
It is awesome. I feel everybody should read it. If you are engaged in voting at all, if you care about the direction that Eve is going and you want it to stay healthy, read that document, reply on the thread, keep it constructive, try to get CCP to come out and make a public comment. I think that's a good idea. And if not, you're at least lending more credibility to the kind of things that the CSM is advocating. And just trust me. Well, you want CCP to take it seriously. Let me just say that there are a lot of options on the table. Not all of them are that great for the community as far as where CCP could be going. And right now is the time to help change their minds about what sort of priorities they should be putting and how to go out there and get the kind of new players that we want in our community going forward. And to make sure that Eve doesn't languish and they don't slide back. And we keep doing things like upgrading the inventory and fixing the war decks and making sure these features are done right, but without the game stagnating. I feel there's a way to do it. CSM feels there's a way to do it. We need to convince CCP that there's a way to do it. And the document's an important way to do that. So head over to GD Park, engage with the community on this discussion. And I look forward to reading all your posts.
Reading that document is a vote for freedom.
USA. Also, we have a town hall coming up. It was supposed to be this weekend, but I think between the New Eden Open and lots of delays on CCP's end, that's probably not going to be happening. But it will happen probably the weekend after that, because we definitely want to have it before the summit, which is the second week of December. And that's another great forum for you to give your feedback on not only the development strategy document, but any kind of summit topic we have or any kind of issue you want the CSM to make sure that they will bring up to CCP at the summit. Go there, participate in the town hall, submit your questions, listen in, and really get engaged. It's a great opportunity for the community to talk to the CSM, for the CSM to talk back to you directly. And it's a great opportunity for us to get the kind of player feedback and player engagement we need to better inform the conversation we have with CCP at the summits. So look for that to be posted up shortly, and really hope we get some good turnout for that and a lot of interesting questions from people. This has been the Declarations of War podcast, episode 39. Go to declarationsofwar.com to participate in show polls, leave a comment, or put in a donation. This podcast is listener supported, and the donations, recurring donations, and sponsorships help pay for hosting, editing, and some cool things we hope to bring you in the future. You can always reach Noir via our public channel, CafeNoir.com, and apply to join us or Noir Academy at our forums, www.noirmerks.com.
Space unicorn, soaring through the stars, delivering the rainbows all around the world. Space unicorn, shining in the night, smiles and hugs forever all around the world. So pure of heart and strong of mind, so true of aim with his marshmallow laser. Marshmallow laser. Space unicorn, soaring through the stars, delivering the rainbows all around the world.
Delivering the rainbows. Delivering the rainbows. All around the world.
Delivering the rainbow.
All around the world. All around the world. All around the world. All around the world. It was like the first time I heard the Beatles.